Accession number 10168, reel number 3.
Right, reel 3. We were talking about discipline imposed by the NCOs. Did you ever have any trouble or clashes with them?
No. I always felt somehow that they were stronger than me. And I didn't feel that I wanted to go and be on what we call yankers. In other words, being court-martialed or disciplined, I didn't feel that it was worth arguing a toss about it. They were always stronger than me, and whatever they said, that was it.
Were many men punished by the NCOs?
Oh, quite a lot of people got punished. Oh, yes. I mean, the punishment really was knocking a pay off. I mean, 5 days' pay or 7 days' pay, you see, and that was a great thing to me, anyhow. I didn't feel like, you know, being fined 3 days' pay because, I mean, you want money. I couldn't get money from home. All I'd got from the army, and consequently, I'd got to be very careful what I did.
So the NCOs were, it sounds like they may have been strict, but they were reasonably fair, because it seems you were able to keep out of trouble by doing what they said.
Oh, well, yeah, quite.
So they wouldn't be irrational.
But they were, I'd say, more often than not, I'd say, it's a lot of them. They really were bullies. They'd try to pick on you. They'd make life so unbearable. Oh, you're doing the right thing. They'd make life so unbearable that you'd rebel against it, and then trouble came, you see.
But you were able to avoid that situation.
I avoided all that, yes, I did. I was told. That's why. And I think the only reason why I did that because I've been disciplined at home so much. It was a throwover from my mother. Against my mother, I wouldn't have gone against my mother or my father. The same as I wouldn't have go against the sergeant majors or the officers. That's what I felt about it eventually. And that lasted right through the army with me. I never rebelled against authority or whatever.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them at this stage?
No, you saw very little of them. In fact, all through my experience of the war itself, I never saw very much of the officers. Even in action, I never saw very much of them.
Would you know who your company officer was?
Oh, yes. You got your platoon man, you see. And really, he was... You've got your platoon officers, and then you've got your captain of you've got four platoons, and you've got a captain over that lot, and then you've got the platoon officers for one each. And if you were lucky, I was always very happy with my officers.
What kind of men were they?
Well, they were nice.
At this
When they first started, they're all very, very educated men. When we first started in this game, right through before we went over across the water, they're all lovely people.
Were they new to it, or were they
all completely new? Mind you, don't forget, a lot of them went to the school before they came to us, and might have had 3 months training to be an officer in the officers' cadet corps, I think it was called in those days. They used to get men and send them there for 3 months, and then give them a star, and you're an officer. And more often than not, they were lovely people. I know the people I've met. They were always very kind to me, you know, when I did have anything to do with them. I mean, I know if I'd have sort of been lagging about, and if I was a bit lagging about and on the march or something like that, if somebody come along and say, oh, I, or something like that. And everything was so nice to me. A lot of them, when I wanted to write letters home, they were always very kind, and that was it, you know, even abroad. They're very kind. You used to have a letter, as you know, abroad.
So the officers were reasonably sympathetic?
Oh, very. The ones I met, the ones my battalion were.
So, although you didn't have much to do with them, they were sort of a benign force as far as you were concerned.
Oh, yes, yes.
You didn't see much of it, but
no,
it was
but
there.
No, but you knew they were there, and it was sort of, whatever they said, that was it. You never rebelled against an officer. I never said a thing.
Now, with your so many of your troops being, your battalion being public school boys, had they not had officers' training corps experience themselves at the public school?
A lot of them had. You see, been in territories and God knows what. And I suppose that's why they joined. But if I may transgress just a wee bit now, after, when we went into the Somme, there were four battalions in my brigade. 18th, 19th, the 20th, and the 21st. Now, they wanted officers. They withdrew three battalions and sent them all back to England to get commissions. But our Colonel Bennett, we were public schools, all fit men to take commissions. And the Colonel Bennett said that I have made this battalion and I'd rather them stay as one group as what. And we were kept, and we were decimated on the Somme in one night, as you know. And all those were officers.
They should have been officers. Was the potential realised earlier, though, in 1915? Did people realise there was a potential there that they could be officers?
No, I don't think so. For a moment, they had quite a few people went, you know, you've got to apply for commission. And I think a few people left us to go back to be trained as officers, but not an awful lot as far as I remember. I don't think it made any difference to the numbers in the battalion, I think.
Now, at Woodcote Park, how did the training progress? Did you get your uniform?
Oh, yes, oh, we got our uniforms then, and rifles.
What did you get? What uniform?
Well, you got your uniform, you got your jacket, and you got your trousers, and you got your putties, and you got your boots. And, what else did we have? Oh, we had a cardigan, a brown cardigan. And, as far as I'm concerned, that's all we had. But of course, from home, you got a scarf and, you know, all that kind of luck. Oh, you had gloves in the army. You got wool gloves. That's right.
Did kit inspections start then?
Oh, yes. It was always on kit inspection.
Do you remember what they were like or what you'd do
Yes, a kit inspection. The ordinary way was taken in your camp, in your hut. Your bed had to be made. And in those days, your kit, you got your pack, and you got your overcoat and your haversack and all the lot, and you got an extra pair of socks, and you got to lay them all out in a certain way on your bed, and if there was anything missing, the officer immediately knew it was missing because that gap, say, where the socks should have been, no socks there, and he'd come along through the bed, just look and say that's all right, but you've got to be absolutely meticulous how you laid your kit out. You've got to be, your brasses have got to be polished, and your leather's got to be polished, and shoes and all that kind of, well, the shoes you're wearing, but everything had got to be nice, you know, all straight as a die. And it was part of the discipline, I suppose.
Did you have any trouble meeting the standards they expected at these inspections?
No, I never did, no. I think you did it. And I was keen enough in those days to do everything I was told, because I didn't want them to send me home, you see. But funny enough, when I was at, I don't know whether I told you before, when I was at Woodcote Park, we used to go, we used to have passes to go out. And we went out one Saturday afternoon, I remember, with about five or six of us. We went to a place called Sutton. And we went to a roller skating place, at a place called Sutton. And first time I'd ever seen what roller skating was on a Saturday afternoon, it was quite a while ago. And I had some port wine, and I got boozed really tight. And I was roller skating around, boozed as a coot, you see. You know, the time came when we got to go home. And these fellas got a hold of me, and mind you, they had a few as well. They got a hold of me, and And we walked, must have walked 4 or 5 miles to get home, which we did. You couldn't get any other transport in those days, unless you got a sort of bus, very few. Or we had a taxi. That was it, we had a taxi. I remember this because they tumbled me out of this bloody taxi. And we went round the back door and they shoved me in the back way of the camper being. And that was the first time I'd ever been really tight. I was really booed on the roller skating rink as it's Sutton. But then
I believe you also had an outing to Epsom Downs.
Yes, so it was nice. The racing was on. It was very near us, of course, as you're aware, Woodcote and Epsom. And the sergeant major gave us the afternoon off. And actually, we went down there, and there was part of the stands was reserved for troops, no cost, which was rather nice. And that was a race meeting which I'd never attended before. I'd never seen a bookmaker. And I'd got some money. I'd got me 4 or 5 bob, you see. And I put it on a horse. And funny enough, by the time I'd finished, I'd lost nearly the whole lot except sixpence. And I went home and we started playing at night. We started playing solo at night. And eventually I got about another shilling or two to spend. So the next day we went again to the racing. And I backed a horse with a sixpence. And the horse was called Fizyama. And I remember it quite well now. And it won the 12-1. And that was one that the sergeant major told us to buy. So, of course, 12-1 to me. It was a fortune. I'd won 6 bob or something, you see, a week's wages. And we used to run round Epsom course regularly with our full pack on. Woodcourt Park was like near the start of the Derby on that side of the. And we used to get on the race course itself, actually. And full pack on and all that kind of business, and run round the Derby track. And I've run round the Derby track at Damsat more times than any horse has run round there. We used to do it nearly every day, you see, because it was so nice. I mean, no racing on. And it was such a marvellous place to run on, you see. We stayed there for quite some time.
Any other training. I know you didn't start your real hard training, or you said you didn't last time, but had you expanded out? Were you doing any other training when you were
there? Well, we got...
Because you got your rifles.
See, we got rifles now, and I'm in rifle drill. Bayonet drill is quite something.
You tell me about the rifle drill first.
Well, a rifle drill, you see, you've got to know all about a rifle. You've got your bolt and you've got your cartridges, to stick in and all that kind of business. And to drill with a rifle, rifles are not light. And by the time you're throwing it about, you know, slope arms and order arms and all that kind, it's quite an effort. But I suppose your arms got used to the weight itself. And the balancing, you see, you're rifling. And the bayonet on the end of it, and you're practicing bayonets, sticking your bayonet into sacks. It's a damn heavy going, you know. You get your bayonet stuck in a sack of straw and try to get it out. And it's damned hard work. And, you might have bayonet rifle 2 or 3 times a week. All kinds of things, you see. I say map reading and running round. And
what about the actual shooting of your rifle?
I never shot anything. I never shot... I'm just trying to think. The first shot I ever made, it was with miniature rifles.
Was that while you were at Woodcote?
And I'm just trying to think where the hell it was. I'm not quite certain what I did, but I know the first thing I ever shot was with an air gun at inside some shed somewhere with small pellets. We had a sort of training course with just holding and sighting a rifle. But to shoot a normal rifle, I don't remember shooting any cartridges till very late on. Till we got to a place called Tidworth. I don't remember shooting any of it. And, of course, don't forget this. You weren't allowed, you see. They couldn't allow any... they were so short, they couldn't allow any live ammunition, you see, in the ordinary way.
And you wouldn't see... They wouldn't have shown you grenades, hand grenades at that time?
No. Well, we started practising when we were at Tidworth...
Right. I'm leading you in ahead of us. So you continued basically the fitness training?
Oh, the fitness and the rifle training and the usual discipline of marching round and doing what you're told and rifled in, parading up shoulder arms and stand at ease and all that kind of rifle drill, which was something, you know. It was quite heavy going when you'd done about an hour of it. And you'd had quite enough. And then we used to sort of stand at ease with your rifle there for probably 5 minutes, and you're back at it again. And it might last all the morning. And then you've got to do probably a 5-mile walk. They've got to fill the time in some way, you know.
What were the route marches like? What would you do on the route march?
They were quite happy, you know, really. We could talk. There's no stopping you talking. You know, always four. We used to walk in four then. It's three today, I think. But in those days, it was four. And actually, funny enough, I used to have a little tiny book of chess. It used to slide these things into a sort of... The book opened, and I got this cellophane sort of... castles and things, and used to slide them in, and I'd pass it along to my pal next door for a move, and going along like that. It was quite pleasant, really, this little chess. I became quite proficient at chess by the time, with this little cardboard thing we had, you know, and you'd talk and sing and, you know, make things happy.
Would you have the band with you?
Yes, we always had a band. More often than not, we had a band. It'd strike up when you get a bit tired, they'd let you go, you see. The idea then was to march. We marched for 50 minutes. I think that was a regulation. And then you had 10 minutes rest. But more often than not, if you flagged after about 5 or 6 miles, you'd probably get the old band having a go at you, you see. And they'd get off with the bugles, and then you'd straighten up and you'd feel a bit better. Band always did a lot for me. Always make you straighten up.
What sort of songs would you sing when you were singing?
All dirty. Oh, you know.
You were allowed to sing them?
God, they encourage you to sing. You wanted to sing to keep your spirits up, you see, and they were nearly all, you know, parodies on some story, some decent song. You made your own filth up. And
so they weren't the sentimental types of just Tipperary?
Oh, no, you'd probably do that at night, but when you're marching, you got your marching songs, and the old Tipperary was one of them, but you'd got your own, you know, it's a lilt, and you can march to it, but the old sentimental stuff. You know, kept that at night when you'd had a few beers, you know, something like that. But you sang. They wanted you to sing, and you kept your step. You see.
Was there any other training at that time you'd done? You mentioned the map reading.
Well, more often, now, you see, in those, usually speaking, the army consisted of a lot of things. It consisted of map reading.
How did they teach you that? Because you meant
well, there were map reading. You've got SOS thing, what I call. You've got machine gunning. You've got bombing, and all you've got little tiny sections. You go to machine guns today. You go to so. So you might have, say, if you've got a corporal, you might have 12 people for machine gunning today. And then another corporal might have, tomorrow you go sniping, you see, or you go something else. And that's how the army was ours in that day. It was sectionized all the time. You went to a certain thing.
And that system was in operation at Woodcote?
Oh, yes. And most people had, you see, I'd had training as a machine gunner. I'm talking about Lewis gun. I'd had training as a sniper. I was a sniper.
Do you remember what the training was in each of these? Anything more about it?
No. You got your Lewis gun, of course. You would take the thing to pieces, and you got to put it back and all that kind of thing. And why he did this and that, and then sniping was another matter. You got your telescopic sight on your rifle, and that was it. And then you got map reading, and you got a Morse code flagging and all that kind. You got to learn all those things. So by the time in the ordinary way a soldier had become mature, he knew a lot about, he'd got to read the map, He got a signal. He got a Lewis gun. He got a throw bomb. He became quite proficient in lots of things.
And this was over the whole period of your
training? Over the whole period of the training, yes.
So it didn't happen all at Woodcote, it was
ongoing? Oh, no, it was all the time. There was always something new coming in.
Now, while you were at Woodcote, I believe you caught measles.
I got measles. And funny enough, it was quite a... an epidemic in there. They sent me to a place in London, and I wasn't feeling really ill. I just got these pimples all over the place and hot temperatures and feeling a bit sick, but in the ordinary it wasn't too bad. But I was there for about 10 days, and I was in a room in the hospital, and they were bringing casualties in from abroad. Wounded soldiers were coming in from abroad, and while some of these fellows came, somebody brought scarlet fever into the ward. Well, I was just then ready for going out, and I was quite free of my scarlet fever, of my measles, and I joined the company at Mansfield. A place called Clipston Camp.
So they'd moved to Clipston while you were in hospital in London?
They'd moved, yes, they'd all gone up to Clipston. And a matter of fact, they were building it. The battalion was still working on some of the huts when I got there, building it. Anyhow, I got there. And the first thing you report to your doctor, and I went to the doctor, and he said, oh, yes, and so. Anyhow, the next day, he said, you're all right now. He said, you're fit to go. He says, you have a leave for... 7 days sick leave, I think it was called. So I'd got to get home, and I'd got to get home to Manchester. Well, I'd got 7 miles to walk from Clipston Camp to Mansfield for a start, and get a train from there to Chesterfield, I think it was, from Chesterfield up to Manchester. And it took me all day. And eventually I got to Manchester. I'm talking about, this is only from Mansfield to Manchester. And I got to Manchester very late at night, and I slept in the YMCA in Piccadilly. And anyhow, in the morning, I got a train down to Earlham, which Caddy said where I lived. And I was feeling quite bright and cheery. But I always suspected that I was going to get this scarlet fever. I knew it. And I was in our backyard, what I call a backyard, I was sitting on the steps, and all of a sudden, I felt this itch on my chest, and there it was. I'd broken out of this scarlet fever, you see. So anyhow, I said to Mum, I said, I've got scarlet fever, you see. I wasn't feeling ill, anything like that. I knew I'd got it. And so anyhow, a friend of ours lived next door, and he was a doctor, Bert Over, and he was a doctor. So he came, and he said, what's the matter? I said, I've got scarlet fever. He said, you got what? I said, I've got scarlet fever. He said, let's have a look. So I showed him my chest. Oh, he says, you've got it all right. He says, you've no right to be here. Now, look down. He says, you've got to go upstairs and stay in your room. And in those days, to disinfect your room, you had a blanket put over the door, soaked in something. I don't know what it was. But I was in a little tiny room with a blanket over the door, you know, thoroughly enjoying myself. I wasn't ill. I think I wet my pyjamas. I wet through one night with perspiration. But apart from that, all I wanted was a rifle. And Arthur said, well, I'll get your rifle. What do you want? I said, I want an air gun and some pellets. And I was so keen on the army then. I wanted to use this and get busy. And I used to knock cats off the wall. I used to watch the cats come in. Like, and I was so keen on this rifle. I got the window open, and any cat that came along, I used to pop at him, you see, and I got quite a proficient. That was, and by the time I was there for, 3 weeks, I think, before the doctor would let me out. And then when he did let me out, I think I got another week free, wandering around, and then I went back in about a month's time to Mansfield.
When you reported back to Clipston, had you fallen behind everybody else, or were you able to slot back in?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And you see, things changed. I was posted in the same company and I knew quite a lot of them.
Which company was that, by the way?
I was in D Company. I was in the 16th Platoon, D Company. What section was that now?
And that's what you'd been in right from the start?
Right from the start.
And you were posted back to it?
Oh, yes, posted back to 16th Platoon, and I think my section. I think I was both four sections. Section 4, I think, in the platoon. You're all in fours, you see. And I think that was where I was. But from there, you see, we did a lot of training there, getting serious stuff. And we were in this camp, and it was quite new. And opposite the camp were all the moors. And the moors used to catch fire. And a lot of fatigue we used to have. We'd be called out at night to put some of these fires out on the moors. You know, we might be out all night on fatigue. You know, shovels knocking, you know, just trying to put these fires out. It was quite, you know, something different anyhow.
Did you do any tactical exercises while you were at...
Yes, we used to do a lot around, you see, we were very handy then to Sherwood Forest, you know, and from the camp going down, this road going down was about, I think to the forest it was about 3 miles. And we used to march down to the forest. And there was a big open glade there that we used to do a lot of exercise. It was quite pleasant, really.
What sort of exercises were they training you in?
Well, we were in marching there, and then, see, we had one big exercise there. It was a whole night, it was a night do. And the road was from Ollerton, I think. And our company was fighting another company. And the officers had to work it all out, the attack and all that. And we attacked through a wood, I remember quite well, at night. We formed up on a road, I think it was Ollerton, I think, somewhere Ollerton, between Ollerton and somewhere. And the crossroad there, and we all formed up, and we had to attack this wood, which was against the roadway. And I remember distinctly leaning against the tree, trying to keep awake. I couldn't let anyone keep awake. And, you know, I did my utmost. I remember a fellow was edging me on all the time. And eventually we came out on the road, and it was breakfast time. It was light. And the canteen was up there, the cooker was up there, and we had breakfast on the side of the road. And we captured it, by the way, you know. But that's the kind of thing we were doing there.
What
and
sort
a
of
lot
form?
A lot of night marches. We used to do a lot of night marches there. They'd dig you out at 9 o'clock on parade, and then you'd march all through the night for about 4 or 5 hours.
What sort of attack formations and defensive measures were they teaching you in these tactics?
Well, it was only a case of, you see, there was no echelon. You went in a line. There was no depth. You'd have one section, say, in a line, and then you'd have a support about 100 yards back, another line. There was no sort of bulk of people going over in bulk, like eventually you found yourself doing over there. But that's how attacks were done in those days. You got an attack, then you got your support, and then you got your reserve to come in if it wasn't successful. That's how the wars were supposed to be fought, because of nothing like that. But that was the idea of them.
Had you been introduced to trenches at all while you were at Clipston?
No, we didn't get any trench work till we got down to when we'd finished with Mansfield. We got down to Tidworth. Now that was our last gasp, where everything was got to be right.
How long were you at Clipston? When did?
I'm not quite certain. Anyhow, I know we went down. It was pretty summerish, I think. When we left about we left in November, so I should think it must have been about May or June by the time we got to Tidworth, because we had a lot of work to do down there.
Well, what sort of camp were you in at Tidworth?
Well, we're in barracks there. Oh, beautiful barracks. You know, you got a bed and baths. Lovely baths. It was an old, regular place. It's Tidworth Barracks, and you'd got your baths and the concert hall. And funny enough, across the parade ground, which was a vast place, we had the 17th Lancers. And the horses, we used to be, you know, nice to see them drilling out there. And they were in my division. Apparently, I didn't know it, but I think they were in my division. But we had the whole of the division down there by the time we'd finished in Tidworth, you see. Which was the 33rd.
And you were the 19th Brigade.
We're the 19th Brigade, yes.
What sort of... You say that was where the real training was. What sort of extra training...
Well, we'd got all bomb-throwing and trenching and, you
what
know...
What was bomb-throwing? How did you go on with that? That was well, the mills, wasn't
it? Had, you had imitation things for a start, and then we got issued with a few mills, bombs, you know. And they'd take you out in the morning, stick you in a trench, and, you know, you'd get... it was quite an art. I mean, to get you... this and get rid of the bomb at, when it's at top weight, you know. It was quite, it couldn't do this with a damn thing. You've got to throw the thing properly to get get it out. You've got the pin out. You see, you've got to do this and get it away, far away from as you could. And we found that doing that
overall
was better than trying to do this. And that was the training. We used to, and then we might go out there for a day. And dig like hell, and it was all chalk down there. And believe me, it was
hard. Were you confident in the bombs and your training?
Oh, yes, quite. You got quite used to the things like that. You got quite used to live stuff. And then we started with live ammunition. You know, plonking at anything, you know. We had...